This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA. With your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Contributing editor at Fandango, Eric Davis, is going to join me to recap a few movies, discuss entertainment news, and a few movie rumors. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I was really looking forward to this movie, The Possession of Hannah Grace. Did you have an opportunity to see this one?
This movie actually did not screen for critics.
Really?
So I have not seen this film, but it was one of these kind of horror movies that dropped out of nowhere, seemingly, into this spot sort of in between the big Thanksgiving movies and the big December movies. And it was kind of quiet, and it had a weird premise, I thought.
You know, I actually went to go see it because I don't like horror movies, but I love scaring myself. And I went and I saw this movie, and about three quarters of the way through, I was all on board. And then towards the end, I really felt like it teetered off and got a little bit preachy. Instead of it being a more like a horror, straight into it like a horror, it developed more into it being an allegory for mental illness. And it kind of got me off board. It reminded me of The Babadook. Did you ever see that on Netflix?
I did see The Babadook. I actually liked The Babadook. I thought that was good because I thought that it did a good job of sort of weaving in the horrors of being of a parent and being a mom. And, you know, I think sometimes if a film sort of executes that in a fun way where, okay, I think it's a monster movie, but it's not really a monster movie. It's actually sort of a metaphor for just parenting. Sometimes that could be cool, but it has to be executed right. And I think when it comes to The Possession of Hannah Grace, I think critics agreed with you. It's only 12% at Rotten Tomatoes, and so I think that you're onto something there.
Yeah, you're right about the execution. The Babadook, I thought, was pretty good because through the whole movie, you were unsure of what was really going on. Was it in her head? Was it an actual spirit, a demon? And that was fine. But in The Possession of Hannah Grace, I didn't like that at all. I went in thinking, oh, it's The Possession of Hannah Grace. And then it kind of teetered off into, no, this is kind of an allegory for mental illness. And, you know, I like those type of movies, but at least tell me from the beginning.
Yes, exactly. I think the good thing about Hannah Grace is that it's only like 85 minutes.
Yes.
It's a short film. So in this era of every movie is over 2 hours, it's not that long.
Oh, speaking of movies that are over 2 hours, did you get to see Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald?
I did see Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald. And, you know, I'm not a big Harry Potter guy, so I think that this film was really crafted for the hardcore Potter fans, people that really know all the ins and outs and who's it's and what's it of the Potterverse. If you do not know that, and especially if you did not see the first Fantastic Beasts, you'll probably be completely lost. It felt like a film that was stuffed with so much sort of subplots and characters, and there was so much going on that you really had no time to remain invested in anyone, in anyone's sort of journey. And that I kind of had some issues in that regard.
Yeah, the acting was pretty good for it. I didn't mind it so much, but I didn't like how it kind of went against the own lore within the Potterverse. And as you can tell, I grew up with Harry Potter, so this is like a big deal for me.
Yes, you're like you're the opposite side of the spectrum from me. You know, I like Harry Potter from what I've seen of it, but I did not read all the books. What I love about these films is I think the production values and the special effects and the score are all pretty fantastic. But I just felt like there was so much going on with all of the characters that I couldn't just say, I'm invested in this one. And then it ends pretty abruptly, too, where you feel like, you know, they're talking about this fight the whole time between Grindelwald and Dumbledore, and it never happens. And so it's you know, they're making, like, five of these movies. But I think that they'll need to sort of, when it comes to the third one, you know, figure out who are we following, really, and let's invest in them, and let's see what their arc is. And I think that's what they need to sort of double down on as they move forward.
Oh, absolutely, because if you've read the first couple books or even the movies, we all know that Dumbledore does win when he fights against Grindelwald. So it's kind of, we already know the ending. It's just, how do we get there? And with this particular movie, I was really upset that this felt like a filler. This was just a movie that set up for the rest of the series. So I kind of felt like I wasted my time sitting here for over 2 hours just for the setup.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how I felt, too. It's sort of like they leave you hanging. And sometimes when films leave you hanging and sort of thirsting for a sequel, it's not so bad. You know, one of my all-time favorites is Back to the Future. You know, I felt like Back to the Future was such a good film. And then at the end, you get them kind of flying off to the future. And you're like, oh, my God, I cannot wait for that. But the problem is that, you know, you want to tell a complete story. You want to tell a story that feels complete. You feel full at the end. And then right at the end, they say, oh, but then there's this. And so you're like, oh, I want to see that. I felt like this film didn't give me that satisfaction. I felt like I was still a bit hungry after I watched it, even though they kind of threw 2 hours worth of stuff at me. I didn't feel satisfaction in terms of a complete story. But I think that if they can kind of, I think they know, you know, where they need to fix some things, because I think if they can fix a couple of things, these movies are going to be gorgeous and beautiful. They're already beautiful to look at. And I think that they can sort of adjust a little bit story-wise and character-wise going into the third one. And I think it could be a much more satisfactory experience.
I went and I looked up how many movies are going to be in this particular franchise. And, you know, you're right, it's five movies. But we all know that the last two movies are going to be a part one, part two. That's just the way things go now. So the third movie is going to have to do a lot of work. There's a lot of work to fill in for that third movie. And I'm not sure that they'll be able to do it.
Yeah, you know, it depends, too. I feel like we haven't, the part one and part two sort of thing, I think we went through that for a while, and I feel like at the end of it, audiences started rejecting, you know, going into a part one knowing that it was just a part one and not just a complete experience. And I think, you know, when the Avengers movies, when the last two Avengers movies sort of bowed out, you know, because originally they were going to do Infinity War Part 1 and then Infinity War Part 2, when they bowed out of that and said, no, we're going to separate it and give you two complete experiences, I think that kind of sent a message to Hollywood to say, you know what, maybe audiences are kind of revolting against this strategy. Maybe this isn't the best way to do. So I actually would not expect the last two Fantastic Beasts movies to be a part one and a part two. I think they're going to try to sort of give you complete experiences of the film, because sometimes that could hurt box office. Audiences will be like, it's just part one. I want to go for part two. I want to see the finale. You know, so I think that they don't, you know, marketing-wise, I think it's a strategy that's now backfired a little bit. And so I don't think they'll do that.
I hope they don't. Let's just put it that way. I hope they don't. I hope it's a complete thing, because I need this. No, I just... you know, there's another movie I went to go see, and I had high hopes for it. The trailers looked really good. You know, the movie posters really put out there. It was a all-star cast, Widows. Did you see Widows?
Yeah, I did see Widows.
Did you like Widows? Because I hated it.
You know, Widows is one of those movies where I feel like the story had some, so I had some issues with the story, and especially some of the character motivations. I love the cast, and I love the direction. I feel like this is a story that probably would have been better suited for a miniseries. Like, I would have loved to see Steve McQueen, who directed this, do like an 8-part miniseries on either like HBO or Netflix of this story, because I feel like it had so much depth to it. You know, it was a heist movie. It was a political thriller. It was a movie about grief and losing loved ones. And, you know, I feel like there was so many different themes of the film that to pack it all into a couple of hours, it felt a little overstuffed. And I felt like I couldn't really sort of sink my teeth into any one aspect of its story. That being said, I thought the women were all great. I thought especially Viola Davis and Elizabeth Debicki. I really liked the two of them in the film. And I love Steve McQueen. You know, I think that this kind of material in any other director's hands maybe isn't as engaging, but in Steve McQueen, I thought he elevated the material. But I didn't hate it, but I did not receive it sort of in the way that I think a lot of the critical community who are saying, why isn't it nominated for more awards? And I'm like, well, I kind of see why it's not nominated for more awards, but I didn't hate it. I enjoyed some of its twists and turns.
The twists and turns, I'm not even sure I can call those twists and turns, though. It kind of felt like there were more like plot holes.
Yeah, there were definitely some. My biggest concern, and I don't want to spoil it too much for people who didn't see it, but which is some of the character motivations. Like, the characters did some weird things in it that kind of pulled me out of the story. So that was my kind of thing with it. But there were a couple of sort of some twists in it that I did enjoy and I did not see coming.
Yeah, when it came to character growth, I really think the only one who had any type of character growth was Viola Davis. She was the only one who really grew from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. And the rest of them just felt like they were just there for the ride.
I agree. I do think that, you know, not only is there this whole political thriller, not only is it a heist thriller, not only is it a movie about grief, but you have these women who are sort of mourning the loss of their husbands. And I felt like we knew a little bit. I didn't feel like we knew them each evenly. I wanted to know more, I think, about Michelle Rodriguez's character. I wanted to know more because she does some interesting things in the film that I didn't necessarily understand because I didn't know her character enough. So I agree that I wanted to know a little bit more. I did like Elizabeth Debicki. I did think she had an interesting arc in the film. I think if I were going to say which of these characters that I want to know more about, it would have been Michelle Rodriguez's character.
It's funny that you wanted a TV show. The movie Widows is loosely based on a book. And in Britain, they had their own TV show. And I think it was either 4 or 6 episodes. So it's kind of funny. If you want to go see it, go for it. Here's a little bit of rumors for you. And I'm curious to have your input on here. I heard that Sylvester Stallone is stepping aside in the Creed series. Now, is that true? Is this rumors?
I mean, Stallone, he says that, you know, he's done. But Creed 2 opened up at the box office with the biggest opening weekend for any of these Rocky or Creed movies. So there's an appetite from the audience. The first two Creed movies are good movies. They're solid movies. They're entertaining movies. I feel like you have to make a Creed 3. And if you're going to make a Creed 3, how does Stallone not be involved? It does not make sense to me. I think that he still has to have a swan song. You know, Sylvester Stallone, like Tom Cruise, doesn't like to kill his characters. So, you know, if you are a Rocky fan, you know that Rocky III was the movie where Mickey died, which was Rocky's original sort of trainer and coach and mentor. So you would think, okay, if they're going to kind of follow along that path, Creed III would be the movie that we say goodbye to Rocky. I think that that's what they should do, but I would kind of take it as a rumor right now. I think Stallone he's one of these guys that he says a lot of things, but I don't necessarily think that he's ready. I think if they're going to make a Creed 3, there's no way that he's not going to be involved. You know, he is the only one that really knows how to choreograph those boxing matches, and I think the reason why they are still so entertaining is because Stallone is very much involved in it. So I can't see, you know, plus, you know, this is sort of, to a certain degree, is his baby. It's his universe. And there's no way they make another Creed movie without him involved. I mean, I just can't envision a world without it. And I can't envision a world where they don't make another Creed movie because the second one was so successful. So if you were asking me right now, I would say, no, don't listen to him. He'll be back for another one.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself. Sylvester Stallone seems a bit of a ham. And I don't think he would want to leave his baby alone with anybody else. But let's just say he does. Do you think that he'll go more into the background at the very least? Do you think he'll just be in the film itself too?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he comes in and he just does some advice work, you know, for them, and he kind of helps them craft the boxing matches. And but you know, I just don't envision a world. I don't envision a world where he's like, okay, you guys go make another Creed movie. I want nothing to do with it. Write off my character, you know. So what are they going to write out, Rocky? You know, they're going to write him off. I can't see him doing that after 8 movies. You know, so, you know, you look at Sylvester Stallone, you look at something like that, what he did, he filmed that video on set. So he's on the set of the movie saying that, you know, he thinks this is going to be his last one. This is before the film has a gigantic opening weekend. And so, I don't know. And then everybody around the world shares that video, you know, saying Creed 2 is in theaters, Sylvester Stallone just did this. So if Sylvester Stallone makes a video from the set and he says, hey, guys, go see Creed 2, I don't necessarily know if the entire world is sharing that video, but if Sylvester Stallone makes a video from the set and he says, this is going to be my last movie, then he has everybody sharing the fact that news is out there, as well as the fact that Creed 2 is coming into theaters. So savvy marketing play, I think, versus him actually saying that he's not coming back. So I think if he does come back in any capacity, he'll be in the film. He will have a hand in writing the film. And I think that it would be us saying goodbye to his character.
Here's another cool rumor. I was reading that they're going to do a Die Hard prequel. Have you heard this one?
I have, yes. It's going to be called McClane.
That's it, McClane? Is that all we got?
McClane. It was going to be called Die Hard Year One. But now, you know, when you looked at something like Logan, you know, that last Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman, how they just called it Logan, and it was just like a serious R-rated kind of everything that everybody's always wanted from the Wolverine character. It was his swan song. So I think they kind of took a page out of that book and said, you know what, we're not going to go for some hammy diehard play on the title for this one. We're just going to call it McClane. It's going to be part of it is a prequel that goes back to the first year that John McClane was on the police force. But then I think part of the story is going to take place in present day. And so I guess it'll be a story that weaves through both. I'm interested to see what they do with it. I've always had my ideas for what I feel like a final Die Hard movie should be, but I'm not writing it, so.
You sound so disappointed. You're like, man, I could have wrote this.
I do. Oh, no, I don't normally do that. I don't normally say, oh, this is, but with Die Hard, I do have a specific thing that I would have liked to see it. I would have liked to see them go back to sort of the roots of the original Die Hard, go back to that one location sort of movie. And my idea would be to have it be at his daughter's wedding, and people attack his daughter's wedding. And so Die Hard at a Wedding is a Die Hard movie that we still have not seen, and I want to see it.
Die Hard at a Wedding, I love it. Do you think that they'll have Bruce Willis attached to this at all, or this is just going to
be a... Oh,
yeah, he is. Yeah,
he is attached. This will be his last Die Hard movie. He's already said it. It'll be a John McClane movie. I'm curious to see who plays the young John McClane. That's one thing that we do not have yet. The movie, I think it's being written still. It's not in production. It hasn't been cast. So I'm curious to see who plays not just the young John McClane, but also the young Holly McClane, because that's his wife. And I think that the movie will show kind of how they got together originally. So I think a young John McClane would be, it's a big casting to make. So, and I guess their hope is that if for some reason it's a hit, then maybe they can go back and kind of soft reboot the Die Hard franchise with this younger McClane. Maybe. We'll see.
Speaking of soft reboots, I read that the next Transformer movies after Bumblebee is going to be, it's not going to be a reboot. It's just going to be different. I'm not sure what that means. Have you heard of this yet?
I haven't. I've seen Bumblebee, which I really liked, which I think is definitely a movie that's starting to get the Transformer series right. I think Haley Steinfeld's great. I think it feels like an 80s film. I think they go back to the Generation 1 look of the robots, which is like a boxier look, and it makes it easier to see the action and to see the robots. I really like that about the film. And so I think that the next Transformers movie after that, I honestly think the success of Bumblebee will dictate what that is. I think they'll probably take a page out of Bumblebee and make another smaller Transformers movie, something that's not as crazy and as big, because I think when it's more personal and when you're more invested in the human characters than you are the robot characters, I think that's really where these movies need to go, and that's what I felt from Bumblebee. And Bumblebee was fine. It's like a Transformers movie that's about something, you know, it's about finding your voice, and I think that for these Transformers films to continue, I think they need to sort of look at Bumblebee and say, why was this film successful? I think we need to do more of that. So that's what I would expect the next Transformers movie to be on a similar path to Bumblebee. Maybe it's about Optimus Prime and we're following an Optimus Prime adventure or something along those lines.
You know, when you said a connection to the robots, I thought of Iron Giant and how it's about a robot, but it's a boy and the relationship with the robot. So I can see what you mean, like in the previous Transformers, you kind of didn't really put yourself with the robots because they're CGI robots. You can't really align yourself mentally with that. But when it comes to Bumblebee, yeah, I'm really excited. I haven't seen it yet, but a girl and her robot, it's a tale that has been told many times, but I'm excited to see this one.
Yeah, it's really sweet. You know, all four of the big movies that are coming out in December are all good movies. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is great. Bumblebee is really good. Aquaman is really entertaining. Mary Poppins Returns is super entertaining. So I'm really happy about the December movies because I feel like no matter which big movie you decide to go to, and they're all great for the whole family too. So, you know, if you're hanging out with your family for the holidays, you're stuck, you need something to do. Any one of those four movies, I think the whole family would love. And so I think that's really what's special about this December, and that's something that we don't normally see from December. Usually there's just like one giant movie and then like a couple of other kind of mediocre movies. This December, we don't have necessarily a Star Wars movie, but we have these other four big movies that are all great for everyone. And so I think that that's really cool.
Speaking of huge movies, Avengers Endgame trailer. Did you see that? Because I got excited for this one.
Oh, yeah. I saw the Endgame trailer, yeah. I mean, it's a teaser. I don't even like to call it a trailer. Even though it's almost 2.5 minutes long, it's still very much a teaser. They don't tell you much of anything. I mean, this is going to be a huge movie. I mean, in its first 24 hours, it broke records. At Fandango, it broke records in terms of the most watched trailer of the year. I think for Disney, it became their most watched trailer of all time. So this is a movie that I think a lot of fans are just dying. You know, well, as we talk about those part ones and part twos, you know, Infinity War, I think, a lot more successful than this second Fantastic Beasts movie. And just in terms of how you feel like you got a complete experience watching that movie, but then it leaves you in such a place where you're like, oh my God, how are they going to sort of figure this out in the next movie? And so Avengers Infinity War was a very, very smart part one of a two-part story. And the way that they hooked you, and they hooked people so much that the trailer for the second one was like the most watched trailer of all time, and the teaser trailer, I should say. I'm beyond excited for that film.
Yeah, when I first saw it and I saw that Stark was by himself, I thought to myself, wasn't he left with Nebula and Rocket Raccoon on the planet? And now he's all by himself? Like, how did that happen? You're right. It is a bit of a teaser, but it did fill in some holes, I thought, and it gave just enough for where you can question it a little bit and try to fill in the blanks. I don't know. I get so excited about these type of trailers.
Yeah, you know, and I would always say don't necessarily lean too much into what they're showing you. You know, the Russo brothers, who directed both films, Infinity War and Endgame, they like to misdirect people. You know, if you remember the Infinity War trailer, the trailers all that we saw the characters running at the screen in Wakanda, and you always saw the Incredible Hulk there with them. Well, they were lying the whole time, because if you saw Infinity War, it wasn't Hulk there running with them. So, you know, they could be putting some stuff in these trailers that's just there to kind of mess with you. That because they don't want to tell you what's really happening. But I did have that question too. You know, wasn't Stark on that planet with these other characters? So what happened to those other characters? Are they with Stark? If they're not with Stark, then where did they go? And so I think there's a lot of that we don't know. You know, they're very strategically choosing what to show us and what not to show us. And so I think that because they want us to still have a lot of questions, you know, and so I'm curious to see what the next trailer would be, because that's the one I think that they're going to have to reveal a little bit about what this movie is and how they're going to sort of solve this crisis that they're in. This teaser sets it up. There is a plan. I think Ant-Man is a crucial part of that plan. I think the Quantum Realm will be a crucial part of that plan. But exactly what they are doing, are they going back in time? What exactly are they doing to help right what's happened? So I think the next trailer will sort of start giving us an indication of what that is.
I wanted to get your take on the owner of this blockbuster, Disney. I know for this year, at least I read it, that they have made $7 billion in box offices. Disney, did you hear this too?
They did. Yeah, it's crazy. You know what? And they're going to even break that next year. I don't know if you realize the lineup that they have in 2019. Not just Avengers 4. I mean, not only do they have an Avengers 4, but they also have a Star Wars Episode 9. You have two massive properties that are ending these storylines that people have been invested in. So you have those two juggernauts, and then around those two juggernauts, you have a Lion King, you have Frozen 2, you have Toy Story 4, you have Dumbo, you have Aladdin. You have a lot of properties that could easily gross $1 billion worldwide. And so I think that they top that next year, and I think that they have, in 2019, I could see them having the greatest year that a movie studio has ever had at the box office.
Well, you forgot to mention, which is really exciting for me, is the Fox deal. They're going to finalize it in 2019, so they're going to make even more money. This is going to be crazy.
It's gonna be crazy, and I think a lot of superhero fans, at least, are excited for that, because they want to see now, post Avengers Endgame, what does this Marvel Cinematic Universe look like, and what does Marvel do? They bring in the X-Men? Do they bring the Fantastic Four? Which is the first Fox property to emerge as part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I think that is going to be another massive question going into 2019, and I think by the end of 2019, we will know where they're going with these Fox superheroes.
Yeah, what I'm excited about is Alien, because, you know, there's the Xenomorph Queen. Does that mean that she's one of the Disney princesses now?
That would be interesting. You bring up a good point, too, is that, you know, Disney is very family-friendly, and they don't really have an R-rated sort of banner that they release R-rated movies. Disney doesn't release R-rated movies. Fox does. And so I assume Fox will remain Fox, and Fox will be their R-rated sort of banner. But, you know, how much of those movies do they invest in Disney? you know, because Disney is very much about family-friendly material. So it'll be really interesting, you know, not just to see if they do anything with Alien or if they do anything with these long-time existing Fox properties, but, you know, how much of an investment do they make in R-rated movies? That's something that I'm also really curious about.
Yeah, because think about it. Fox has Deadpool, and that goes on the cusp right there. It goes a little bit too adult even for those kid movies. So, well, it'll be interesting to what they do with that.
It will be interesting. I'm very interested to see, because I think a lot of fans would love to see Deadpool in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, you know, how do you kind of bring Deadpool down to a PG-13 level? I mean, they're doing it this December. They're actually re-releasing Deadpool 2. With about 20 minutes of new footage and all new jokes. They're releasing a PG-13 version of it. And so I think that might be them kind of testing the waters and saying, can Deadpool be a PG-13 character? Does he have to be R-rated in order to be successful and in order for fans to show up? So I'm curious to see. It's called Once Upon a Deadpool. I'm curious to see how well that does and how well it's received.
Now, I know you already said that some big movies, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Bumblebee, Aquaman, and Mary Poppins, they're all opening this month. Is there any other movies, though, that we should be on the lookout for?
If smaller films, there's a film called If Beale Street Could Talk that I'm a really big fan of. It's directed by Barry Jenkins, who his last film was Moonlight, which won Best Picture. It's based on a James Baldwin novel, and I think it's a really sweet and soulful movie. If you're looking to kind of get away from the big blockbusters, I would highly recommend If Beale Street Could Talk. And there's also a movie that Nicole Kidman is in called Destroyer, which is Nicole Kidman like you've never seen her before. It's kind of got like this detective noir, gritty slant to it. And I kind of dug the film. It's a bit dirty and dark, so you have to be in it. You'll know about 10 minutes into the movie if this is your kind of cup of tea. But if it is your cup of tea, then you're going to love it.
Okay. All right, Eric, you're scaring me here. You didn't say anything about Mortal Engines.
Maybe that's on purpose.
I saw the trailer every time I went to see a movie this past few weeks. It was Mortal Engines. And I'm like, I want to go see this movie. But I'm really scared too because it looks bad. And I was hoping you would say something good about it.
I think it's very ambitious. I think it's inventive. I think the effects are pretty cool. But if you want my complete honesty, when I watched Mortal Engines, it felt like Mad Max Light. I was like, I kind of just was like, you know what, I'd rather stop watching this and go watch Mad Max Fury Road. That's kind of how I felt when I was watching it. But Fantastic Beasts is another movie that's got a lot of characters, a lot of story, a lot of subplots, and it feels a little overstuffed. But it is ambitious, and it is sort of inventive in sort of this post-apocalyptic kind of storyline that they tell. But if you are a Mad Max fan, you may get a little jittery kind of wanting to just watch a Mad Max movie instead.
Yeah, I was watching it, and I, you know, my father, he was like, what kind of movie is this? It looks horrible. You know, London's eating other cities. What is this? He's got a point. It's weird.
It's a little weird. Yeah, it's a little weird and a little crazy. You know, I wouldn't say it's awful, but I definitely think it had some missteps.
Some missteps. It sounds like they missed quite a few missteps there. All right. Thank you so much, Eric, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can always find me at Fandango and on Twitter at Eric with a K, E-R-I-K, Davis, D-A-V-I-S, and you could follow all of my daily exploits over there.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.